The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 461. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. If I may, real quickly, I'd like to just talk about something that's going on at my home, and that is, of course, the hockey rink is up, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. A few folks that are avid listeners reached out and asked if I put the rink up this year. Of course I did. It's what I do every winter. And thankfully, Mother Nature has been quite cold, and that's helped to make some decent ice. I say decent because there's a couple of places where the ice is a little bit choppy. But hey, man, that's what happens when you don't really Zamboni it. I think that might be my next purchase, is to get a Zamboni for this. I mean, they make like small portable ones. I may have to investigate and pick up one of those for subsequent years. But nonetheless, I'm doing well. The rink is doing well. And I'm ready to talk to you about my great guest on this episode. He is an actor, a writer, a producer. His name is Timothy J. Cox. And he has quite a large resume. He's been doing this for quite a while, no matter if you're talking about on the stage, for television, or for films. And we're going to talk all about how he got involved in acting, how he got some of the roles that he's had. We're going to talk about some of his past projects, such as Sundays with Dad and Protanopia, and even some future projects, such as Good Luck to Me. You know, it's a fun interview. It's a very philosophical interview, as we kind of talk a little bit about how you write for film and for TV and what some of those differences are and why Ohio's such a hotbed for creative folks. So I'm really excited, so I'm not going to waste much more time. What I'm going to tell you is that I am going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Timothy J. Cox. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, I am sitting down with an actor, a writer, a producer, a man of many talents, Mr. Timothy J. Cox. Timothy, how are you today?
Wonderful, John. How about you, sir?
I'm doing well. You're out in Western Ohio?
I'm in Bellbrook. I'm still getting my bearings because I was in New York for so many years, like 20 years. So I'm close to Dayton. So it's probably about 15 minutes out of downtown Dayton, close to Centerville and places like that.
Ah, I gotcha. How's the weather out there? Because we in Columbus, you know, we're getting a little snow right now.
Yeah, we got a little bit, like a dusting a little bit ago, but it was 7 degrees this morning. And when I'm not working on a film or a play, I'm a substitute teacher, and I walk to school. It's a 20-minute walk, and I do that. And it's good to get that morning air in your lungs. But everyone looks at me like I'm nuts. Like, you walk through that? It's like, hey, I lived in New York. I've dealt with far worse weather. But I think it's supposed to be -2 or -3. So I think my wife might drop me off tomorrow.
I think that might be a smart idea.
Might be a good idea.
Well, let's start off with the question that I think probably whenever you sit down and are interviewed by somebody that you get this question. But how did you end up in the world of acting?
It was completely by, accident. When I was in the eighth grade, I was kind of a class clown then. And I don't know any school that does this, but they actually had announcements for auditions for the school play during the school day. And it was during math class, and I would have done anything to get out of math class. So I went and auditioned for the school play, having, I had no aspirations to be an actor. I wanted, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be Joe Montana or Larry Bird, or, I mean, of course, I had no athletic ability whatsoever. And then I went in, auditioned for this play, got cast, and that first moment when I went out in front of an audience and heard that live reaction, I was like, it was like a switch went off. Like, oh, it was like something that it's what I'd been looking for my whole life. And if my, my family says I was an actor years before I decided to become one, I think it was just, I just needed the right opportunity. My hatred of math, that's what I needed to, you know, to propel me, to drive me into the theater and to this life. And 35 years later, I'm still doing it.
How did you go from being that middle school student that tried out? I assume that you went to a drama club maybe in high school and then on mm-hmm. to secondary education and whatnot. Can you walk us through those steps?
Sure. Like when I, after that first time on stage, I did theater in high school. And, but at that time, in high school, I just wanted to be funny. I mean, like my model for at that time, the kinds of characters that really was Ed O'Neill on Married with Children. So I would do like Ed O'Neill impressions of Al Bundy in class, which the teacher got a kick out of and he saw something. And it was really when I got to college that I learned about the disciplines and the techniques. I was on campus. I went to Marietta College, just a couple hours from here in Marietta, Ohio. And I was on campus for about 5 days and I got cast in my first Shakespeare. And I learned that I had no idea what I was doing. I learned like about, you know, just I knew that I needed a lot of work. And I had a teacher who, Steve Rader, he was great with me. He was tough. But the one thing I learned is that if he was tough on you, he saw something and he stuck with me. And, you know, in college, that was when I really started to really, you know, get into playing character roles and being a supporting actor, because he directed me in a way that he said, look, you know, if you stick with this, if you have any success as an actor, it's probably not going to happen until you're in your mid-40s. So play character parts now in your 20s and in your 30s. And when you hit that age, you know, your 40s and close to your 50s, you would have already done all of this groundwork that you have so many characters in your treasure chest that you could just dig in very, very easily. And that's pretty much exactly what's happened. So he was a smart guy.
I have to ask you, you know, you said your very first 5 days on campus and your very first, you know, casting opportunity was in a Shakespeare. Had you read Shakespeare before? Because I would have no clue, because I did not take British Lit in high school or college. So for me, like, Shakespeare is very foreign to me. Maybe I should be embarrassed to admit that, but that's the truth.
It was scary. My only other interaction with Shakespeare was we would do monologues from Henry V in class. And I honestly, I would just go out and I would watch the Kenneth Branagh, or I would watch Laurence Olivier, or, you know, you would just kind of just to make sure you understand what the heck you're saying. But as time went on in college, like Shakespeare is intimidating, but like I developed a great love for it, because the more you see it, the more you read it, the more you interact with it, the more you understand it. I think that's really with any playwright. And I got exposed to, you know, Arthur Miller and Eugene O'Neill and, you know, Oscar Wilde and all of these things that just reading them as a fan of the theater, not thinking that, oh, wow, this is a role I'd love to play someday. Just, I think it was intimidating. I think, you know, looking back on it, like the first time I read Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller, it was so, because this is, it's a monumental part of Willie Loman that so many actors want to climb that mountain. Every actor wants to climb the Hamlet mountain or the King Lear or, you know, Eugene O'Neill. And I think when I was in my 20s, I saw myself as a light comic actor. Like in those days, I would have been happy if I just did Neil Simon or, you know, British farce or, you know, comedies for the rest of my life. But I think as time has gone on, like, and you build your confidence. And that's really what those early years were all about. It's, you know, going out there and actually doing it and believing in yourself, trusting in the process, trusting yourself and trusting the people. And that takes a long time to develop that confidence and the thick skin that an actor needs in this work.
So let's switch to, you got into independent film or indie mm-hmm. films, and obviously that came after you had this experience with the stage. What was the biggest difference that you noticed when you made that transition, when you went from the theater to being cast in an independent production? What was the biggest change, if you will?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, in the theater, you know, everything is bigger. You know, you're trying to reach the person sitting in row 5 and someone sitting in row 500. And you, for film, you have to pare that down where it's, you know, subtlety. And in the beginning, there were a couple of things like learning to not, in essence, act so much, but also really just getting used to the way film sets run. I remember, you know, in New York, I would work at NYU and School of Visual Arts and New York Film Academy. They have a lot of really wonderful film programs. And really, in those early years, the doing of it was just to build up my discipline and, frankly, patience for, you know, there's the old line, I think Alec Baldwin said it. He said, you know, you could be on a film set for 12 to 16 hours and you, the actor, may act for 15 minutes. And so learning how to, you know, in the beginning, when I started going from theater to film, the patience, like, come on, like not really having an understanding that movies are not just made because of from actors. Movies are made from set designers and mm-hmm. cinematographers and sound people and all of that. And developing that appreciation for, and now, you know, one of the biggest things I love, like, you know, the energy on a set is just watching how all of the pieces of the puzzle come together. The first movie that Tom and I did was a movie called After, a script that I wrote. And the way that that set ran was like, just, I just had such an appreciation for just how everybody did their jobs simply, easily, relaxed, no tension. So compared to when I started, I probably started seriously getting really serious in the movies in around 2010. I had done a couple of movies from 2001 to 2010, but I had a streak of movies that I never saw a finished version. Like, you know, you get every excuse from a director. Like I think I actually got an excuse from the director. My computer got stolen or out of my car that had all of the footage on it. And I said, now I think back, I'm like, okay, if you didn't like the movie, that's a pretty elaborate excuse. But so I think in the biggest transition was paring down from the stage to film and also just developing a respect for the process of making a movie. It's long and it's hard and it's tough.
Well, you mentioned, of course, friend of the show, Thomas Angeletti, and you were in a recent production called Sundays with Dad. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little summary of that project?
Sure. It's a script that I wrote. It's a two-hander about, there's this character, Ben. He is a widower. His wife, Maggie, recently passed away. And, you know, he's kind of at that very vulnerable point in his life after his loved one passes, where, you know, he's kind of thinking about, you know, his next chapter. And his son, Jason, who I play, comes over and they have these Sunday visits together. And because as his son, he worries about him, worries about his father. And on this particular day, and they have this fun banter, this almost like this kind of vaudeville shtick that they have. But on this particular day, Ben admits to Jason that he has hired a young woman named Heather from an escort service, not for anything sexual, but for companionship. And of course, you know, Ben knows exactly how Jason is going to react. He knows he's going to think that it's going to be, you know, something inappropriate. But the movie has a lot of humor. It has a lot of heart. And, you know, I wrote the role of Ben specifically for the actor George R. Hildebrand, who plays the part in the film. And working with him was just such a delight. And I wrote that script. And Tom is always my go-to person. If I write something, my feeling is if Tom likes it, if Tom thinks that there's possibilities, we're going to move forward. And we did. And we shot it just this past summer, and now it's currently out on the festival scene, and it's already doing pretty well.
Yeah, I was going to say it's won some awards, most recently the Rohip International Film Fest, but mm-hmm. there's many others. How does it feel to receive that recognition?
It's really nice. I mean, the thing about you know, awards and good reviews and all of that, that's it's nice. It's nice to get the pats on the back and all of that. But really, the real joy is in the doing of it, like, you know, in the work. I mean, every actor has an acceptance speech in their hip pocket. I'm no different. But the thing about, you know, awards and reviews and all of that, you know, even good ones, they're kind of like they're brief little highs. And I always allow myself about 10, 15 minutes of like, yeah, you know, that feels good. And then you got to get back on the horse and, you know, pursue the next challenge or, and of course, you know, the biggest thing, the biggest joy is getting the film seen, because independent films, especially independent short films, they're everywhere from all over the world. And, in Ohio alone, I mean, this community, in Ohio is extraordinary as far as the talent that, is out there. So if our film is out there on an international awards circuit, nothing wrong with that.
I'm going to ask your opinion on the statement you just made, because sure. I've heard this before. Why do you think Ohio is so good at cultivating talent, especially in the arts?
It's interesting. It seems to me, you know, in coming from New York, that Ohio, it seems to be, in another interview, Anthony Riggs said, there seems to be this very welcoming, small town, homespun, like support base. And I think there are a number of really wonderful festivals that go along there as well. You know, Fright Film in Columbus and Winter Film in Cincinnati and 48 Hour Film Projects. And when I moved here almost 5 years ago, you know, you start to see a lot of the same people involved in these festivals. Like Tom and I met, we were having a chat over Instagram during Winter Film. He had another film that he was working on. I had another film, and we sort of clicked in our mutual, we just speak the same language. And I found that with a lot of the people in this area, that everybody, we want to do good work. We want to tell good stories. We want to, you know, for me in writing, you know, you kind of want to chart your own course in a way. Like, and I still go out there and I auditioned and hit the pavement, but there really is something about just going to a film set with something that you wrote and people believing in that crew and actors and other people as well. So it's, I always say Ohio, I think, is this industry's best kept secret. You know, it's, there's just so much talent here that, that's nice. Like, 'cause 20 years ago, if you wanted to be an actor, you went to either New York or Los Angeles. Yeah. Now, or now Atlanta is very, very popular, but, you know, now there are productions that are, you know, going to coming from Cincinnati and Cleveland and Columbus. And, it's nice to see. It's really nice to see.
Do you also think, too, that there's been that shift over the last, say, 15, 20 years because of technology, that it's allowed people to, in Illinois or Saskatoon or Puerto Rico, wherever they are, you now have more technology that allows you to tell your story without breaking the bank?
Oh, absolutely. When in around 2009, I worked on the first one I worked on with a digital camera. And I remember it was on a set of a film called Socks and Cakes. And they're setting up and I'm like, where's the camera? And it was the Canon 5D. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, you're going to make a movie with that? And I saw the finished film. I said, wow, you made a movie with that. And so I think when that happened and when you could make movies with you know, iPhones, I mean, the digital age really definitely changed things. And of course, you know, the way, you know, with the rise of, you know, sites like, you know, YouTube and Hulu, and now with Tubi and all of, there are ways that films of all shapes and sizes can go out there and find an audience, which at the end of the day, you know, that's honestly what people want. You know, they just want, you know, put my film out there and give it a fair shake and see what the world thinks of it.
Well, let's talk about another film that you most recently have had a role in. And I hope I pronounce it correctly. Is it Protanopia?
Protanopia.
Protanopia. Okay. Geez, I did not get that one right at all.
It's not something that when I first, Matt Mailer sent me the script. I actually, of course, went on. I said, what the hell does Protanopia mean? And I thought, because I'd like to think I'm a reasonably intelligent person, but it's like, and I thought, all right. And, but yeah, so that's a fun one.
Yeah. It's kind of more along the lines of a horror film. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to know, like, did you take that role because you are a fan of horror films, or did you want the challenge of doing something different?
The challenge of doing something different. Matt is someone that I had, prior to Protanopia, I had done three films with. And the first time I worked with him, I think he was 13. We worked on a 48-hour film project that he and his father were kind of co-producing. And I get to set, and I see this 13-year-old, and I thought, oh, my God. But he's like, okay, you know, this is what I'm thinking. I want to do, like, you know, a Stanley Kubrick, you know, this. And I said, okay, this kid knows what he's talking about. And with Protanopia, he, anything that he does is always something that is different and challenges me. And so he sent me the script, and it's fun. It's a wild one. I always say that if David Lynch wrote an old-time William Castle haunted house film, it would probably be something like Protanopia, which Matt, who's a big David Lynch fan, you know, he says, I'll take that. But it's an interesting film. It's got an interesting reaction. There are people who have dug it, and then there are people who have not, and that's totally fine. But it's interesting reading the reactions to the film.
So let's talk about one more film. I know you have a lot on your IMDb. I mean, because you've been doing this a very long time. You said 35 years. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Just side note here. Why do you think you've lasted that long in this game, if I may ask, if I may be so blunt?
I think I still get that excitement.
Okay.
Of when you go out on stage. I'll give you an example. I just did a stage version of Misery, Stephen King's Misery, in California at the end of October. And I'm standing backstage before I go on, and I still get that little bit of the butterflies. And it's not nerves. I call it nerves of anticipation. I can't wait to get out there because it's opening night again. And it's the same thing with on a film set when you're working with good material, with good people in front of and behind the camera, that I still get that excitement. Now, the moment I lose that enthusiasm and or joy, then it's time to do something else. But I never bothered to learn how to do anything else, so this profession has stuck with me.
Okay, well, that just clicked in my head while we were chatting there. But let's talk about Good Luck to Me, about a couple and their marriage is kind of viewed through the lens of the various changes that a relationship goes through. So where did you pull inspiration from for your role as Doug?
I had wanted to write something with Heather Bales, who also co-wrote and co-stars in the film. And originally, I was thinking of writing a comedy, but my mind always goes towards something. The thing about, like, you know, scripts like After and Hard Truths and Sundays with Dad and Good Luck to Me, I'm always curious when I'm writing and even when I'm acting, how people and characters, how they cope with like these kinds of everyday situations, like, you know, problems in marriages, marriages that end, marriages that, you know, go through these tests. And, you know, you show these little slices of life, like where at the end, you hopefully leave the audience wondering, I wonder what happened to that character. Because the thing about a good short film is, like, I don't like when everything is tied up in a nice, neat little bow. I think, like, life, you always want to, like, some of the best movies or the best plays I've walked out of is where I have questions. And then that leads to more questions. And then, you know, so it keeps you engaged in the project. And so with this, it's really something that, I mean, one of the influences is very much, you know, sort of the works of Ingmar Bergman and Woody Allen in Interiors, which was an homage to Bergman, where you have dialogue, but you say so much in a look. Or so much in, you know, it's what's not said, because, you know, everybody, if they're experiencing a breakup or, you know, if you get fired from your job or something like that, everyone has that thing that they want to say. They want to have, you know, like the big speech that Hugh Grant gives in Love Actually, where he tells off the president to the press. It's a nice idea, but most people, you know, when they're in that moment of the reality, most of the time you're kind of speechless. And so in rehearsals and what we've been doing already, we're finding those moments where you can find the silence, because I think those are the powerful moments, because audiences can relate to that. Like where if your relationship is coming to an end, or if it's struggling, or if you're, you know, if you saved it, you know, sometimes words escape you. And so that's really what we're striving to accomplish with this one. And of course, you know, Tom at DP again, and Maya Ahmed, who had directed Hard Truths, is going to be directing, and she's wonderful. And we have the same wonderful crew, I think Tom always says I do have to write a more like a traditional comedy, just because sometimes the movies can be a bit of a downer.
Well, he told me that he feels obligated to do a mob flick because, you know, of his Italian. But so there you go. You could trade off. Do the comedy. He has to do the mob film. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. And he always has such the thing I like about Tom is that he is always about five steps ahead. One of the things that makes him such a good producer and director and cinematographer is that if we approach him with something and he said, okay, well, if you do this, then these five things may happen. Or if we don't do this, then so it's nice. And everybody on the team, like no trace of ego, and it's real relaxed, real light. I mean, we shot, we shot after at an apartment in around here in about 4 or 5 hours, and that was a 17-page script. And Hard Truths, which was largely improvised, well, most all improvised, but we had outlines that we followed, and we did that in like 6 hours. And Sundays with Dad, we shot in under 4 hours because George and I, we rehearsed. I like rehearsal. I mean, I think there's a benefit to it because especially if you have in these single locations where I love the confinement of a single space, like after in a single living room or, you know, Sundays with Dad in the backyard, you know. So there's a lot of tension, dramatic and comedic, that you can create in those kinds of things. And the more prepared you are as an actor, it makes their life, the crew's life, easier, because that way we could shoot in long continuous takes. Like Beth Metcalf and I, when we did After, I think we would do like 6 or 7 pages at a time, which is not normal. You know, they'll do a page, stop, and then, you know, but we did it. And that was really influenced by Woody Allen. Woody Allen typically, I don't think, does a lot of close-ups. Like he does, she likes to shoot in master a lot of the case, which is fine with me.
Well, I think that we kind of touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to know, how do you select your roles when you get a script that's sent to you from somebody maybe that you know real well or maybe that mm-hmm. you don't know real well? How do you select that script, and have you, I assume you've had to have turned down some scripts in your yeah. profession. So can you comment on those two questions?
I think, if I read something that I haven't done before and if it scares me, if it's something that scares me, I'm in. I did a movie last year with Brian Jones called Creatures of Habit, where he sent me the script, and it was a short, like sort of a proof of concept piece. And I read it, and it's one of those things I always like to say, where, God, what made you think of me for this? And then you think, wow, this is something different and fun. And it was a really nice, juicy part with almost Shakespearean-like dialogue. He's this, Theo White plays this crime investigative reporter sitting in a bar, and this mysterious stranger who seems to know a lot about Theo's character and what he's all about, you know, comes in, and it's kind of like a Twilight Zone episode. And Brian just wrote this really, really wonderful script that was different. It was challenging and a little scary. Because it was one of those things where it was kind of Shakespearean, where, and you learn it cover to cover, because when you're on set doing it, if you even drop or change one word or, you know, take a pause that's not needed, it kind of messes up the rhythm. And so with things like that, like especially if something scares me, I'm all in. And most of the time, I think mostly if any actor these days turns down anything, it's usually because of availability. But sometimes it has been because of the quality of the writing. If it's mm-hmm. something that if I don't click with the characters, or if I read something and go, well, that doesn't read honest or true to me, that doesn't feel real, that's usually a signal that goes up most of the time. But I hate turning down anything because I like to work. But if I turn down anything, it's usually because of availability. You know, I have a 7-year-old, and you know, my wife as well works, and so we try to work around schedules as much as possible.
Well, let's talk real quickly about some upcoming projects real quick before we kind of start talking a little bit about some miscellaneous questions I have.
Sure.
So what do you have coming up here on your docket?
Let's see. I just finished a new script called Dan's Birthday, which Tom is going to direct, which we hope to do this year. And I'm going to work with a wonderful actress named Ashley Lawhorn. And it's the story of... The film starts out with a car accident, killing the death of a young boy. And it turns out that, then from that accident, it's 10 years later. And the father of this young boy is sitting on a park bench. And the girlfriend of the bung boy, who turned out to be his son, they meet together. And it's 10 years later. And it's the day of his birthday. And they're discussing, you know, how they're still grieving and how it's affected their lives. And it's a, you know, it's a really short piece. And I wrote the part of the girlfriend specifically for Ashley. You need to get her on this show. I think she is one of the hardest working actresses in Ohio, and one of the best. And of course, one of the nicest, sweetest people. So that's the thing, is like, when I write something, I like to write for people that I genuinely love. Like George Hildebrand, you know, he'd been knocking around as an actor for a couple of years, but had never really been given an opportunity to really show what he could do. And I had seen him in a film, and I said, this guy would be perfect for this part that I'm thinking. And I wrote Ben in Sundays with Dad for him, which is, you know, if someone writes a part for me as an actor in mind, that's like the greatest compliment. So Dan's birthday, and let's see, what else do I have coming up? I would love to get back on stage this year. There is a chance that I might be doing a play in May, and I want to let the cat out of the bag yet, because it's not set. But I have another script that I wrote called A Ravenous Wolf, about kind of, it's an homage to 12 Angry Men, one of my favorite movies, that a priest in this small fictional Ohio town has been arrested for molestation. And the chief of police, the district attorney, the priest's attorney, a reporter, and the mayor are all in this room in the sheriff's office, trying to figure out how this incident, which has rocked this small community, how they're going to deal with it. And this priest that is a friend to all of them. And so like that, like it just like the tension and of that situation. And of course, Tom is going to direct that as well. Have a couple of movies coming out, and I'm drawing a blank on stuff that I have coming up, but good luck to me. That'll be a fun one. I think that has a lot of potential to be something very, very special. And then of course, just out there auditioning and you know, hitting the pavement like any actor.
Let's real quickly, before I ask these miscellaneous questions, let folks know where they can find you on social media and on the web, so that when you have these great projects kicking off, that people can follow you.
Sure. Well, of course, you know, a lot of my information is on IMDb. If you type in Timothy J. Cox, you'll see a bunch of projects and some biographical information. I'm on Facebook at officialtimothyjcox.com, and on Instagram at Timothy J. Cox.
You already mentioned 12 Angry Men, but what are some of your other favorite films to watch?
Oh, wow. God, how much time do you have? I mean, this list changes all of the time, but I have to go with, see, for me, and some people allow, some people don't, I count Godfather 1 and 2 as one film. I like Part 3, but Part 3 gets a bad rap, but for me, the Godfather films are about as perfect of American films as you get. Love the Big Lebowski. It has that has a personal place in my heart. When I was in college, that movie played on a loop when I was in a house I lived in. Like, I'd walk in and you'd always hear like Sam Elliott's voice at like 10 o'clock at night. I was like, well, the dude's coming on. So the Sting was probably, that's like a remote drop. That's a movie that I can watch, and never get bored with it. And It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Life. I played, when I was a senior in high school, probably the first real serious role I ever played, as I played George Bailey in, the stage version of It's a Wonderful Life. And, so that story and that character means a lot to me.
Well, one thing I was going to mention is, by, of course, doing some research, You taught me something that I never knew. And I'm embarrassed to admit to it because I like Jimmy Stewart. He grew up, you know, outside of Pittsburgh, which is close to where I'm from. I did not know that there was a museum in Indiana, Pennsylvania for him. I'm going to have to go now.
I went this past summer. It's wonderful. It's a nice, sweet, like small little museum, but like it has all of his posters in there. It doesn't have any of his Oscars. I think the Oscar that he had won for the Philadelphia Story, I think when he had won it in 1940, I think he sent it to, I think his father ran a hardware store, and I think he had donated it to his father. And then I think his Lifetime Achievement Oscar, which I think he won in 1985, I think his children, I think, might be in possession of it. But there's a lot of really great posters and memorabilia and cowboy hats. And just going around, you just see, like, wow, this guy, he did everything. Like, the amazing thing about It's a Wonderful Life was that it was a bomb when it came out. And, you know, after the war, I mean, he and Frank Capra, like, they kind of struggled to get their footing back in Hollywood. And then he reinvented himself by doing the great Westerns that he did with Anthony Mann, like The Man from Laramie and Winchester 73. And then, of course, he just had this remarkable career that, you know, you just see it in all. And it you just can't help but love it.
Oh, I so hope that there is some cool stuff in what I think is one of his masterpiece performances, is the Cheyenne Social Club.
Yeah, I think there is.
Oh, good. I love that movie. That movie is fantastic. Just him and Wayne Fonda it's Henry Fonda. Sorry.
Henry Fonda, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Shirley Jones. It's a fantastic film. It's got a little bit of everything to it. I discovered it because a couple of years ago I did a summer where I was catching up on a lot of Westerns because I was very, you know, I wasn't into Westerns, and I started checking them out, and that one happened to just be by happenstance, and I'm like, I'll check this out. It's Jimmy Stewart. I like Jimmy Stewart, you know, and I fell in love with that. I think that's my favorite Western of all time.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. Like, when I was growing up, like, Westerns were not my thing, and I'd say probably over the last 5-6 years or so, I've been watching more Westerns, you know, all of the Sergio Leone's and John Ford. I mean, The Searchers alone, I mean, my God, like Red River, like all of those, they're extraordinary. And they're great. They're just great stories that, I mean, Shane is another remote drop. That's another one that, like, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, you don't have a worse bad guy than Jack Palance in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Intimidating in capital letters.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, you know what? My new genre to really learn and appreciate and respect is musicals. I really haven't watched a lot of musicals previous to the last couple of years of my life, but I've really been trying to give those more attention, more respect, more adulation and whatnot for the great art that it is.
Sure.
Well, Timothy, anything else real quickly before we wrap things up here real quick?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say thank you, John, for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Okay, I'm glad. I'm always happy to hear that when folks tell me that they came on and it wasn't a drag. It was fun. And with that, folks, again, check out Timothy on his social media. Follow him so you know when those movies are coming out, what his next project is, and everything else. And Timothy, it's been great talking to you. So thanks again.
Thank you, John. Take care.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Timothy J. Cox, talking about his career in film and the stage and television. You know, it's really cool for me to be able to sit down and chat with these folks because I'm a huge fan of movies and I'm so curious as to how movies are made and the process involving getting an idea from pen and paper all the way to finished product. So definitely check out Timothy's social media, keep tabs on him, and you know what? Go catch some independent film. You know, whether it's something that Timothy's in or not, there's plenty of great people in Ohio, in the Midwest, all around the world, making great films, TV projects, and doing some great plays as well. All right, with that out of the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode of the PVD cast. First off, you can find me on Twitter. That's right, I'm still on Twitter. I don't know why, I'm a glutton for punishment, but you can reach out at my personal handle, which is at PVDMVP. You can also drop me a line over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts. Just look for at PVDcast. And you can even email me if you like, if you're old school. And that email address is, of course, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. And I know some of you are like, what about Blue Sky? I'm still thinking about it. I'm on the fence, folks. I'm just exhausted with the social media that I have. I don't know if I want another one, but I don't know. We'll see. As I said, I'm still on the fence. But for right now, Twitter, Facebook, Threads, and Instagram are the top four there. So maybe you want to let some folks know about where they can hear the PVD cast. Well, let me run down those various outlets. First off, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the easiest place to get every single episode of this show. But it's also available through your favorite podcasting outlet. All you have to do is go to the search bar within your outlet, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. If you listen through your favorite outlet, I need you to do a favor for me. I need you to rate and review the episode that you listen to, because it pushes me up in the algorithm, and it's something that those companies like Spotify ask to have on file. I don't know why. I don't know. I'm just following the rules. I say, just give it a short little blurb. Hey, great episode, and 5 stars, all right? Or something along those lines. You give me what you think I deserve. But nonetheless, that is probably the second best way to check out the PVD cast. And then the last way that you can check out this great show is, of course, through the Facebook page, and once again, that's at PVDcast, where every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there you go, 3 easy ways to hear this show. That is, of course, PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet, and of course, through the Facebook page, Wednesday nights, live broadcast, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2025.